Welcome to Behind the Latch, inspiration and evidence for lactation professionals. Whether you're a new lactation consultant, a seasoned professional, continued learning is essential for staying up to date and providing evidence. I'll bring you expert interviews, research recaps, and case studies to help you refine your skills and elevate your practice. No matter where you are in your IBCLC journey, this podcast is for you. Welcome to Behind the Latch. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and in this inspiring episode, I'm joined by Dr. Lobe Adeguyebe to talk about her groundbreaking work in establishing Nigeria's first dedicated breastfeeding clinic. Dr. Lobe shares the story behind the clinic's creation, what inspired her, the challenges she faced, and the impact it's already having on maternal and infant health in her community. We also discussed unique cultural, systemic, and clinical considerations involved in launching a specialized lactation service in a country where care has been limited or unavailable. This episode is a must-listen for anyone passionate about global lactation support, equitable access to care, and innovation in public health. Let's dive in. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume of information for the IBCLC exam? Unsure of how to tackle those tricky questions or picture-based scenarios? I get it. Studying for the IBCLC exam can feel like an uphill battle. But what if I told you there's a proven way to simplify your prep and walk into exam day with total confidence? My exam mastery course is designed to take the stress out of exam prep. It's packed with strategies, insights, and resources to help you master the material, and I personally guarantee your success. Here's the best part. 100% of the students who've completed my course have passed the IBCLC exam. That's right, every single one. And if you don't pass, I'll give you your money back. That's how confident I am in this course. My course isn't just about memorizing facts. It's about understanding the why behind the questions, spotting the keywords, and mastering the perspective you need to ace even the toughest scenarios. Stop guessing yourself and let me help you simplify your prep, boost your confidence, and achieve your dream of becoming an IBCLC. Guaranteed success or your money back. Your future as an IBCLC starts here. Welcome, Dr. Lobe.
Hi, Margaret. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I am so impressed by the work you're doing, and I'm really excited for my listeners to hear all about it.
Thank you. Of course.
So let's start by telling everybody where you're located and what work you are doing.
Okay, so I'm located in Lagos, Nigeria, and I am a medical doctor, but now also a lactation specialist. So I started the first breastfeeding clinic here in Nigeria, and we run both physically and virtually. So that's basically what I've been doing for the last year or so.
Amazing. So before we get into why and how and all of that about the breastfeeding clinic, can you tell me a little bit about the breastfeeding landscape in Nigeria? Do most people breastfeed? Is there any breastfeeding support? Tell me all about that.
Okay, so the breastfeeding landscape is very interesting because even though we say that breastfeeding is more cost effective than the other options, it's not widely practiced here because we don't have the support in the healthcare system. If you walk into any hospital now, before you see Jack Robinson, there's a kind of formula. In fact, in some hospitals, as a mother delivers, before she even actually has a chance to hold her baby, there's, you know, a kind of formula coming on the table.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So yeah, even amongst healthcare professionals, lactation help was not a thing in this country at all. Even amongst doctors, to be honest, you know, we say put to breast and that's where it ends. So That's kind of where we are. So if we go to the grassroots, we find that a lot of low-income mothers do try to breastfeed directly because pumps are a bit on the higher side financially, but they mix in a lot of homemade breast milk substitutes. So, because they can't afford to pump, they can't afford, and they don't know how to and express, and they can't afford actual formula. So they make their own breast milk substitutes, but usually the nutrients are in a ratio that is not the best for the growing infant. So a lot of their children eventually end up malnourished with kwashiorkor or marasmus, things like that. So that's kind of where we're at. A lot of the high-income women I meet tend to want to breastfeed, but because, again, they don't have access to professional help, once there's a roadblock, even something as little as, oh, just a dip in supply when their period returns postpartum, they tend to give up because there's no one to tell them what to do. They don't, you know, so a lot of information is from TikTok and Instagram and things like that.
That's so interesting. So does Nigeria not uphold the WHO code of marketing a breast milk substitute?
No, Nigeria does not. Okay. Nigeria does not. Unfortunately, so I was just telling you that walking to any hospital, formula is there like this. It's sort of sold in the hospitals. It's like buying candy, to be honest. We're trying to change that. But as of now, the code is definitely not upheld.
And do most mothers return to work soon after delivering their babies?
Yes. So in Nigeria, typically most mothers get 3 months of paid or half-paid maternity leave. So a lot of mothers tend to have to go back to work after 3 months. And for some of them, they can't cope, especially for the high-powered women. Because, again, because of where we are at in the country, we don't have like nursing rooms or pumping rooms. And you don't get pumping breaks, you know. It's not a thing that employers give. So how are they going to pump, you know? So a lot of them just start. There's something we call pap. It's a porridge that's very popular when we want to take a child. Milk to solids, we start with pap. So by 3 months, lots of mothers are already giving that.
And you've mentioned pumps a few times. Are they widely accessible but just cost prohibitive, or are there not a whole lot available?
They're actually very widely accessible. We have like really good ones. We have the poorly made ones there. We have really traditional ones as well, actually. So I would say that for every economic class, there's a pump, good or not, but there's a sort of pump available to them. But because, you know, not everyone has access to potable water in the country, the upkeep for pumping is high, you know, because you're not sure if maybe the water is clean or sterile. So you have to either put in boiling water or sterilize after every session. And lots of mothers find that that's so stressful, even mentally. You know, they're working, they're cooking, they're cleaning, they're breastfeeding now. They want to wash pump parts after every session.
Right.
For some people, it's just easier.
Yeah, it sounds not sustainable.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of challenges that you see that mothers face in your country. Mm-hmm. What was it that led you to create Nigeria's first breastfeeding clinic?
Okay, so sometime in 2021, my elder sister, who's also a doctor, had her first child. And she was having issues breastfeeding. Up until then, I actually didn't know you could have issues breastfeeding. Well, my family of doctors and everybody was useless and we didn't know what to do. You know, we're all just standing around, mommy, looking to our mother because she's the only one that had a baby. But when she, because she's a pediatrician, she had some breastfeeding training, but she didn't have like such specialized training that she could actually help. So that was the first time my eyes opened to it. And then a couple months later, WHO at this training, and I said yes, and I fell in love. Mm-hmm. I fell in love. It was just like the difference you make in a woman's life, you see it like that. Like when you enter and their baby is struggling to latch, they are stressed. They just had, you know, they just delivered. They thought, oh, it would be so easy to be automatic. And they are, you know, they are tense. And then you just make a couple adjustments, you teach them what to do, and their baby is latched on. Sometimes they cry.
Yes, I love that.
I feel like it's addictive.
Yes, I love that.
I was like, I love it. Honestly, you could wake me up now and to talk about breastfeeding, and I would.
I love it. So you did the new training.
WHO, then I tried to further it with the ER, Lactation Education Society. Yeah, then I'm looking to take my exams in September.
Amazing.
But then I'm reading lots of textbooks, learning from other women like you, and just helping as many women as I can, to be honest.
Amazing. That's really, really great. So tell me, are there any special cultural or religious beliefs around breastfeeding or breast milk in Nigeria that make exclusive breastfeeding complicated?
Yes. So I tend to see very different thoughts about this. But the older women, our grandmothers and our mothers, some believe strongly in breast milk, just breast milk, just breast milk. But then you see 60% of them saying it will never be enough. You have to add the path that I mentioned earlier of formula. You know, they're like, the baby's crying. But, it's because we're also used to formula. You know, you give 30 meals, they sleep for 3 hours. But it's not like that with breast milk. So you're like, no, baby's crying. You have to give more. Top up. The word you hear the most with breastfeeding in this country is top up.
Interesting.
Everywhere, literally top up. In fact, I've been in some hospitals and the nurses there is telling the mothers, top up. She just had a baby, it's colostrum. It's not supposed to be a lot, but right. They say top up. So I think that's the first thing that a lot of people seem to believe, that it will never be enough. Then I also say that there's an oversupply culture where we're also so obsessed with the amounts in the bottle. Mm-hmm. So women are choosing an oversupply. And it's like, no, you need just enough for the baby. You don't really need gallons and gallons in your freezer. Yes. And lately in the past month, I've had a lot of cases of mastitis and abscesses because of women overpumping, choosing themselves into hyperlactation.
Yes.
Then something else is some people don't believe in colostrum. Mm. So, they always say, express it, throw it away. So a lot of babies miss out on that. And then some people in the country as well believe that if you go maybe 6 hours without breastfeeding or pumping, the milk would have gone sour. So express straight away. Yeah.
So interesting. I mean, some of the challenges that you are experiencing are the same things we experience here.
Really?
The belief that there's never going to be enough, the topping mm-hmm. up is definitely an epidemic here, and also oversupply. But in the wanting the freezer full of milk, but
yeah,
it sounds like it probably is coming from the same place, TikTok, social media. That's where that is really coming from. Yeah, are you seeing those silicone Hakka breast pumps there?
Yeah, I even have one here.
Yeah, they are the responsible for the epidemic unfortunately.
Yes. No, straight from either the theater or delivery room, someone now bringing it out to you. I'm like, let's try and latch baby first. Yeah,
please. Let's just start with the baby. No equipment, please.
Yeah.
So tell me about this journey to become a Nigeria's first breastfeeding clinic. Did you receive any support or pushback with wanting to do this?
Okay, so when I first had the idea, to be honest, everyone kind of felt like it wasn't reasonable. Because again, in this country, there was nothing like lactation help. It wasn't something that you could go to a hospital and ask for, even online in the country,
Interesting.
Yeah, even amongst doctors. For the first year, I had to explain to every pediatrician and obstetrician I met that, yes, there's such a thing as, breastfeeding medicine.
Exactly.
It's not something that, they know. So now I would say it's been a year and a half, so more people know about it. I don't have to explain myself as much. But there was that pushback, and then a lot of people just felt, oh, it's a job for the nurses, because typically in Nigeria, the doctors handle the medical cases, and then the things that you don't consider important dust aside. So, but and that's fine actually. That it's just that again, there was no training, so right. A lot of myths and harmful practices were also coming to teaching the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of pushback from doctors that felt it wasn't necessary, and other healthcare workers that felt I was encroaching in their space.
Right.
So yes, but I also got at least one or two people who believed, who saw that, there's something that women need. And in fact, they were the reason why we got off the ground, because they would just connect me. They would call me, oh, there's this woman. And slowly and surely, more people started to hear about it.
Nice. Amazing. And were you able to get any money, any grants from anywhere to help support starting this?
No, I wasn't, to be honest. I used a lot of my own personal money to begin with, just to buy the dolls I would use, or the simulation breast, things like that. And then the money that I would get from my, because I was still working as a doctor when I started this, I just stopped working as a doctor. From my own money, I would add to make up for it. It's better now, I would say. But at first, I had to use personal money here.
So since there's been no breastfeeding support in Nigeria, there's been no government support for it. There's no insurance support. There's nothing like that, right? So how do people that come to the clinic pay for their services? Do they just pay out of pocket?
Okay, so some women do pay out of pocket. But I found that if I see a woman just after she's delivered, that HMO will pay for it. Okay. Because, you know, I don't know, there's something about she just had a baby, you know, fine. And if they deem the diagnosis serious enough, they will pay for it. But for some other women, the HM wants to turn it down and say, serious or not, if it's not, you know, core medicine, we don't want to pay for it. So they pay out of pocket. Or, and sometimes, to be honest, because eventually I build a rapport with these women, so I end up doing lots of things just out of the relationship being built. But the good side of that is that when their friends go through it, they're like, oh, just go make the club, go to the best fitting club. Mm-hmm. So that's how it's working for now.
That's amazing. And what kind of patients are you seeing? Are you seeing a lot of latch issues or more complicated things?
At first, I would say that it started with the basic, just low milk supply and latch issues. But it seems like something must have told the air that someone, because this year we've been seeing a lot of like breastfeeding and surrogacy and adoption.
Nice.
Yeah, like women who have like hypothyroidism, PCOS. I've got lots of challenging cases like that. So the abscesses I've seen this year have been more, I would say, more than I even saw last year, to be honest. And it's just March. But mm-hmm. It could also be that now they know that there's someone who can help, you know. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why they seem to be coming out more. I also do get the low milk supply, the basic one that's easy to fix. So just a latch problem. I find that with latches, and this is really why I like to see a mother straight out of delivery.
Yes.
Correct it in that window. But good, you know. But if they go home and they're used to pumping and used to formula.
Yes.
You know, even they sometimes are impatient, you know, they think, you know, give me a medicine, give me, just do something. And it's like, okay, we'll teach baby, but you have to practice and it'll take a bit of time. So I really, for latching, I really like to, that first 1-2 weeks, I really like to.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. So I saw on your LinkedIn yesterday or the day before a picture that you posted of a mother pumping bright yellow colostrum. And the mother said something like, what's wrong with her milk? Can you tell us about that story?
She had an emergency C-section for a second baby. So her baby was in the NICU, the neonatal ICU. I try to encourage those women in particular to start pumping on time. If not, they won't, you know, they'll be too worried about baby and things like that. So we started pumping, and then we were starting to get a bit of colostrum at first. And she said to me, oh, the milk is dirty. At first, I thought she meant the bottle, the pumping bottle was dirty. So I was a bit confused. Like, no, it's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong. She's like, no, why is it that color? I said, oh, I thought you had a baby before. She said, well, I directly breastfed. You know, I delivered vaginally, put the breast immediately. She never actually saw her milk.
She never saw it.
Yeah. I was like, oh my god, that was so interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
So I actually brought out my phone and showed her pictures of different degrees of yellow.
That's nice.
But it's fine, there's nothing wrong with it. And I thought that, oh, this is even best, to be honest. Baby's first vaccine, packed with all the things your baby needs right now.
Yeah.
So it was a laugh. Our husband came in and, you know, explained to him and so on. That was it.
So did she actually feed it to the baby then once you explained it?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, I was impressed not only with the bright color of it, but the volume was so huge for pumping.
Yes. And that was our first ever pumping session. It wasn't like, you know, but the truth is that before that happened, where I spent a whole day, because the day she delivered, after a couple of hours, went in to talk to her, just made sure she was in the right frame of mind. Sometimes it'd be equal. There's just a lot going
on. It's a lot, yeah.
And I explained why it was important to start pumping on time, at least because baby wasn't there to latch. And she was like, let's do it. So nice. The first 3 times, nothing. And she was like, oh, she's discouraged. Let's just do pumping. I'm like, no, it'll come.
It'll come, right.
So after maybe by the evening or the early morning, I've forgotten when, she just started producing a lot. So much so that she started to take it for granted. She was not saying, I'll pump. I was like, I'm not doing that. No.
Right. That's amazing. So it looked like she was using a personal use pump. Does the hospital have the hospital grade pumps available?
No, unfortunately not. So, you know, I explained that I'm just trying to get a lot of things, you know, standardized to make them routine so that we have proper lactation care. We don't do, no hospital in this country has hospital grade pumps. It's not something that is routinely provided to mothers. Because again, you know, the thing about being in a developing country is that it seems like there are too many other things to prioritize that some of the basics are ignored. So because it's like, we have to actually keep our life and stuff. And it's like, okay, but, you know, breastfeeding and things like that. So sometimes it's like, let's throw this away. Yeah. So yeah. No, we don't provide. And what I now see is a lot of women coming to the hospital underprepared because a lot of them think, one, they'll deliver and it's automatic. Milk will flow, baby will latch. They don't realize that's not really how it happens sometimes.
Right.
And then also because, again, they don't know that there are pumps that are actually better at stimulation expression. Right. See a lot of bad pumps. And like there are some pumps that I see that all they do is pull the nipple. Like it's so painful.
Boy.
And you know, sometimes they think, okay, it's just the pulling that will bring the milk out. We can't afford to give you blisters, you know, the nipple pumping and things like that. So luckily she had this pump that worked really well for her. But that's not always the case, to be honest. There are many times where, because they've spent money on the pumps, and sometimes it's expensive. But I have to sit there and say, you know, this pump is not the best for you. I understand it's expensive. I can teach you to hand express. And, you know, as long as we keep our hands clean, have clean containers. But the truth is that a lot of them prefer to have it automated because they think it will be easier than using the hands all the time. Yeah. So I'm hoping to get that. I did have a couple patients last year from Nigerians, but from the UK and US, who rated some hospital grade pumps and brought it with them.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah, but then they went back eventually and took their pumps with them. Sure. So, yeah.
Amazing. So, have you seen an increase in breastfeeding outcomes, increased duration, or increased access to breast milk since you started your breastfeeding club?
Definitely, definitely. And the way I measure it usually is with mothers who are multi-para, so they've had one or two kids. I always ask when I meet, also, how did you go with the previous breastfeeding experiences and how long did you breastfeed for exclusively and continued? And then we measure it then. So because it's been a year, I'm now asking mothers I've seen last year, January and co, and, you know, they breastfed for longer and easier.
I love it.
Which I think is important. I feel like if the journey is too tough for a mother, you know, she's not going to want to continue. So I really try to make it like she's having a good time. Because if it's something that she feels she has to strive for, she's not going to want to do that for long.
I love everything you're doing. And I really hope you are. I mean, it sounds like you are collecting some metrics there, but you need to write about this. You need to publish it because this is really important work. This is really important work. Yeah. We've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about how there's really no other support.
Mm-hmm.
There's no workplace support. There's too much marketing. There are no hospital grade pumps available. You don't really have any government support because breastfeeding is not a priority. What are you hoping to achieve in the long term here? Do you want to address any of those things, or what's your real objective here?
So my goal really is to make just with each mother I see the journey easier. But I decided that with each mother would be too slow.
Mm-hmm.
So I now post a lot of things on TikTok and Instagram and LinkedIn now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also looking to partner with the government, with states and federal hospitals, because that's where we have many women. So if it can become mainstream, just to even help so that they know just basic things, you know, like imagine going to like the lowest level of healthcare in this country, which is like a primary health center, and just explaining, don't throw away colostrum. That make a huge difference. Just telling them to throw away colostrum already, even if you go to work and come back or go to the market and come back, your milk hasn't gone sour in your breast.
Exactly.
So make a lot of difference. You know what I mean? Or teaching them to hand express. So, you know, it's not even really for me about doing 100% at once, but these small, small things that can happen as you're working towards exposure. And one thing that really, really, I would say includes this is how easily accessible formula is. There are definitely babies who need formula, definitely. But there are so many babies who don't.
It's the marketing that's problematic.
Like it's normal. People in the hospital bag, they like you. See, enteral and SMA, and you know, like it's almost like it's expected that they won't produce milk, you know what I mean? It's too much, and I feel like the hospitals need to block the access a bit. Exactly.
It's really unethical for them to even be giving free formula to the hospital in the first place or using that as a marketing channel. There's lots of papers written about how unethical it is, but
for sponsoring lots of our meetings, which is what happens, they give us the pens and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Are you familiar with the breastfeeding peer counselor model?
Breastfeeding peer counselor model. No, yeah. I don't think so.
So it's something that I'm sure it exists in other contexts, but in the United States, through the US FDA, they have a program called Supplemental Nutrition for Women, Infants, and Children, and the acronym for it is WIC, W-I-C. And it is a food and nutrition program to help at-risk mothers and children 5 and under. And a big part of their program is to do breastfeeding education. One of the things that they have done is to create a breastfeeding peer counselor program. Breastfeeding peer counselors are mothers who have breastfed their own babies for a specified amount of time. And then they get some training, really the basic stuff, like what you talked about, that the colostrum is really important, basic latch things, that your milk doesn't go sour. And then they are able to use their experience and their really basic training to provide basic breastfeeding support to other mothers, their peers. So a peer counselor program, doing some training with peer counselors, may be a really beneficial way for you to do some of that really basic ground level education in the clinics and things like that. Because what the research has shown is that the outcomes are really good when it's somebody similar providing the same information to them. That peer-to-peer support. La Leche League, which is an international organization that started in the 50s in the United States, is a similar model, but they call it mother-to-mother support, but it's still peer support. But that peer support can be really efficacious. And that may be a really low-cost model that you are able to do some of that really basic ground-level education. And then that way, the complicated things get escalated to the clinic, and the basic things are handled at the peer support level.
That's very interesting. Thank you. I've heard of La Leche League, but I do know about the breastfeeding care counseling program. So I'll definitely look into it. I'm sure that a couple moms will have helped.
Exactly. You just kind of start with a couple. Right. You could just start with a couple that could, you know, share their passion about how it worked for them, especially if this was like their second baby and the first time was really problematic. But once they learned more and it was more enjoyable, they could share that. And it really will help to, you know, win other mothers over. For me, I was a teen mom with my first child, and I went to La Leche League groups for a few months when I was pregnant before I delivered. And it made a huge difference just to watch people normally hold their baby and touch their breast and latch their babies. It, you know, we hear, at least here in the United States, oh, everybody has breastfeeding problems, but you don't have to if you recognize what's normal. I don't know. I feel like the peer support model may be something that could help.
I'm sure it definitely will. We're a very community-driven country, you know, now. Like, lots of the recommendations mom gets to buy certain things is based off of my friend bought it, my sister told me.
Of course.
You know, so I'm sure that would actually she looked into it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. I can share some research articles with you too if you need that. But that may be something that may be really beneficial to you.
Thank you so much.
I think getting governmental buy-in to the WHO code will be problematic. I mean, we have failed here in the United States with that. Money is really hard to overcome with that.
Yes, that's really it.
That's what it is. Yes. But you know, education may be able to combat a little bit of that influence. So is on your list of things to accomplish to expand and have more than one clinic, or what else is in your future?
So for now, I want to see how one clinic does. If it does really well, I do want to look into expanding. Then I also want to really expand our virtual clinic. So right now we also see women in South Africa and Ghana and some women in the
amazing.
Yes. I priced it a bit more affordable. Because I'm in Nigeria, technically I can afford to, and I know it would be easier for because they spend too much money already on hospital bills, baby clothes, baby decision. So I don't want this to be seen as, you know, like an additional cost. I want it to be something that they benefit so much from that they are like, you know, so grateful for and spreading the word about. So I'm also trying to expand the reach of our virtual clinic as well. And then release a lot more free material on the internet. A lot more, you know, actual correct information. I think it's really the oversupply thing that, you know, because a lot of women come to me and they're like, you know, they have normal supplies, but they think they should be doing 1.5 liters.
Like it's not enough, right? Yes.
Okay. First of all, that's marketing.
That is 100% marketing. Yes.
So that's, I'm actually very happy with where we're at now because, like I said a year ago, just getting people to even take this seriously, you know, was something else. Even with doctors and, you know, so I'm so much happier with where we are right now. And I'm hoping that the momentum just keeps building and that women know, it's important to me that they know that there's help available. So even if, you know, they start out well, but something does go wrong, they know, okay, we can get this fixed and keep on with the breastfeeding journey. Easy.
I love this. This was so great. Thank you so much for spending time with me today to talk about this. I would love to follow up with you in a year to find out what else you've done, because I know that it's going to be really amazing and profound, and I'm so excited to see what comes next for you.
Thank you so much. I'd actually be glad. I will hopefully in a year, like the peer-to-peer program is up and running very strong.
Yes.
And I have someone written a paper about this, just the breastfeeding experience in Nigeria.
Yeah. Love it. Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Margaret. I had a good time.
Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe. And check me out on social media at Margaret Salty.